You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of essays by Rudolf Steiner that are intros to Goethe's scientific writings entitled Nature's Open Secret. This is Chapter 8, entitled From Art to Science. When we wish to portray the spiritual development of a thinker, we must explain in a psychological sense how the particular direction of this development arises from the facts of that person's life. In presenting Goethe the thinker, however, we need not only to justify and explain his particular scientific direction, but more importantly to show how this genius became active as a scientist in the first place. Goethe suffered greatly from the false assumption of his contemporaries that poetic creativity and scientific research cannot be united in a single individual. What is most important here is to answer the question, what motives drove this great poet to take up science? Did the transition from art to science simply stem from his subjective inclinations, from personal whim? Or was Goethe's artistic bent such that it led him of necessity to science? If the former had been true, then Goethe's simultaneous devotion to art and science would have resulted merely from an incidental personal enthusiasm for both aspects of human endeavor, and we would be concerned with a poet who also happened to be a thinker. Given a somewhat different course of life, Goethe might have taken up poetry in the same way without any interest whatsoever in science. Both aspects of this man would then have interested us separately. Both might have contributed a good deal to human progress. But this would also have been true if these two spiritual directions had lived in two different individuals. Goethe the poet would have had nothing to do with Goethe the thinker. But if the second supposition is true, then Goethe's artistic impulse would have demanded, out of its own inner necessity, to be complemented by scientific thinking. It would be simply inconceivable for the two impulses to have been divided between two personalities. Each of the two impulses would then interest us, not just for its own sake, but also because of its relationship to the other. There would then be an objective transition from art to science, a point where they meet in such a way that mastery in one field demands mastery in the other. If this is the case, then Goethe was not merely following a personal inclination. Then it was the artistic impulse to which he was devoted that awakened needs within him that could be satisfied only through scientific activity. Our age believes in keeping art and science as far apart as possible. They are thought to be polar opposites in human cultural development. Science, presumably, will give us the most objective picture of the world, show us reality as in a mirror. In other words, it is supposed to keep entirely to what is objectively given, and to exclude all arbitrary subjectivity. Its laws are determined by the objective world, to which it must subject itself. Science is supposed to find, entirely in the objects of sensory experience, the criteria for what is true and false. When it comes to artistic creations, everything is supposed to be totally different. Their laws stem from the autonomous creative power of the human spirit. In science, every interference of human subjectivity is considered a falsification of reality, a transgression of experience. Art, on the other hand, is thought to thrive on the subjectivity of genius. Its creations are products of the human imagination, not mirror images of the outer world. The origin of scientific laws lies outside us, in objective existence. The source of aesthetic laws lies within us, in our individuality. Therefore, the latter are not considered to have any cognitive value whatsoever. They only create illusions without the slightest element of reality. Those who view the matter in this way will never come to a clear understanding of the relationship between Goethean poetry and Goethean science. As a result, they will understand neither. Goethe's great historical significance lies in the fact that his art flows directly from the primal wellsprings of existence, that there is nothing illusory, nothing subjective about it, but that it appears rather as the herald of the lawfulness apprehended by the poet as he listens to the world spirit deep in nature's working. On this level, art becomes the interpretation of the world's secrets, just as science is in a different sense. Indeed, Goethe always thought of art in this way. Art was for him one revelation of the primal lawfulness of the world, science the other. For him, art and science spring from a single source. Whereas researchers delve into the depths of reality to formulate its driving forces in the form of thoughts, artists seek to imbue their medium with these same driving forces. Quote, "I think one could call science the knowledge of the general, abstracted knowledge. Art, on the other hand, would be science applied in action. Science would be reason, art its mechanism. Wherefore, one could also call it practical science. And finally, therefore, science would be the theorem and art the problem," from Verses in Prose, close quote. What science expresses as idea, theorem, is the same lawfulness with which art informs its medium. It becomes art's problem. Quote, "In human works, as in those of nature, what is most worthy of note are the intentions," close quote, from Verses in Prose. Goethe looks everywhere, not only for what is given to the senses in the outer world, but for the tendency through which it has come about. To grasp this tendency scientifically, to form it artistically, that was his mission. In forming her own works, nature gets herself, quote, "into specifications, as if into a dead-end street," close quote. We must go back to what might have come about if her tendency had been able to realize itself without hindrance. Just as a mathematician never focuses only on this or that specific triangle, but is always mindful of the principles underlying all possible triangles. The essential question is not what nature has created, but according to what principle she has created it. The task then is to develop this principle as befits its own inner tendencies, and not as it has occurred in nature, where it was dependent upon a thousand contingencies. The artist's task is, quote, "to develop out of the common the noble, out of the misshapen, the beautiful," close quote. Goethe and Schiller embraced art in its full profundity. The beautiful is, quote, "a manifestation of secret laws of nature, which without its appearance would have forever remained hidden from us," close quote, from Verses in Prose. A glance into the poet's title, Italian Journey, is sufficient to realize that this was not an empty phrase, but profound inner conviction, as when he says, quote, "The great works of art are at the same time the most sublime works of nature, brought forth by human beings according to true and natural laws. Everything arbitrary, everything fanciful falls away. Here is necessity. Here is God." September 6, 1787, end of footnote. It is evident that for him, nature and art have a common source. With regard to the art of the Greeks, he says in this vein, quote, "I have a hunch that they proceeded according to the same laws as nature herself, laws whose traces I have been following," close quote. And of Shakespeare, quote, "Shakespeare joins company with the world spirit. He plumbs the world as it does, and nothing is hidden to either. But if it is the business of the world spirit to keep a secret before, often even after the fact, the poet is of a mind to give the secret away," close quote. Here we should also recall the, quote, "joyful time," close quote, that the poet owed to Kant's title Critique of Judgment, and that he actually owed only to the fact that here he, quote, "saw the creations of art and of nature, one treated like the other, that the capacities of aesthetic and teleological judgment each illuminated the other. I was pleased that the art of poetry and comparative studies of nature were thought to be so closely related, since both are subject to the same power of judgment. Close quote. In his essay, quote, "Significant furtherance through a single ingenious word," close quote, Goethe placed his objective, in parentheses participatory, poetry, close parenthesis, alongside his objective, participatory, thinking, with the very same intention. Let me read that again. I'm going to not worry about the parentheses. Goethe placed his objective participatory poetry alongside his objective participatory thinking with the very same intention. Footnote. The adjective used here in the German original to characterize Goethe's thinking as well as his poetry is gegenständlich. This word can be variously translated as concrete, object-oriented, representational, objective, and in the spirit meant here also participatory. See page 271 and editor, end of footnote. To Goethe, therefore, art and science appear to be equally objective, only their forms are different. Both appear as the expressions of one being, as necessary steps in a single development. Every view that relegates art or the beautiful to an isolated position, removed from the whole picture of human evolution, is repulsive to him. Thus he says, quote, "In the aesthetic realm it is no good to speak of the idea of the beautiful. In so doing we isolate the beautiful, which cannot be conceived of as separate," from verses in prose. Style rests upon the deepest foundations of knowledge, on the essential nature of things, in so far as we are permitted to grasp it in visible and tangible forms. "Simple imitation of nature, mannerism, style," close quote, close parenthesis. I believe that's a work by Goethe. End of quote. Art is therefore based on knowing. Science has the task of recreating, in thought, the order according to which the world is constituted. Art has the task of developing in individual detail the idea of this order. Artists incorporate into their works all of the world lawfulness available to them. Works of art, therefore, appear as miniature worlds. Herein lies the reason why the Goethean artistic tendency must be supplemented by science. Even as art, it is a form of knowing. What Goethe actually wanted was neither science nor art. He wanted the idea. And he either stated or portrayed it, depending on how it happened to present itself to him. Seeking to ally himself with the world spirit and to reveal its working, Goethe did whatever was required, working either through the medium of art or through that of science. Neither one-sided artistic nor one-sided scientific striving lay in Goethe's nature, but rather the never-resting urge to, quote, "behold all seeds, all active power," close quote, from Faust, line 384. This does not make Goethe a philosophical poet, however, for his poetic productions do not make a detour through thought to their sense-perceptible formation. Rather, they flow directly from the wellsprings of all becoming, just as his scientific research is not permeated by poetic imagination, but rests directly upon the perception of ideas. Still, while Goethe is not a philosophical poet, to the philosophical observer, his fundamental tendency appears philosophical. Thus, the question of whether Goethe's scientific works have a philosophical value takes on an entirely new form. It becomes a question of deriving the fundamental principles underlying these works from what we have of them. What must we posit so that Goethe's scientific assertions appear to flow from these premises? Our task is to express what Goethe left unexpressed, but which alone will make his views comprehensible. The end of chapter 8.